And welcome to Futures in Languages, a podcast showcasing stories from UCF's Modern Languages and Literatures Department alumni. I'm Christina Torres, and today I'll be talking with Dr. Elizabeth Giltner, who is my partner in crime and fellow host for the spring 2021 season. Today we'll be talking with each other and doing a little bit of intro so that you can get to know us a little bit more. Hi, Liz, and welcome to our Futures in Language podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be with you.
Liz, we're really excited to have you in this season as a fellow host. And so just to give our listeners just a little bit of background on us, I just want to start off a little conversation. My first question for you is, why did you become interested in learning French?
So I actually got placed into a French class because the Spanish classes in my eighth grade year were full.
Yeah, fun.
I didn't need to take PE. I was running track all the time. So I just wanted to take a language and start in on my high school credits and figured I'd get 1 year done in middle school, 1 year done in high school, and I'd be done. Mm-hmm. So I was put into a French class because the Spanish classes were full, and I ended up getting a B in my first French class, mm-hmm. which makes me laugh now. And then when I got into high school for French 2, the way that my teacher taught just made sense to me. It made everything make sense. And I was able to see how I could communicate, how I could manipulate the language to actually communicate with people. And then I went abroad with that same teacher in the summer for 2 weeks to France. So he sparked my interest. He made it make sense. Mm-hmm. And then I went to France, and then I just kept wanting to go. I wanted to go as far as I could with it. So that's really what started me off. What made me want to learn French was a teacher, and what it's the same person who made me want to teach French and gave me that idea, that passion. What about you? What sparked your interest in TESOL, and how long have you been teaching?
So that's a fun question. I think that in my story, I grew up in a bilingual house. I grew up with, my parents are from the lovely little island of Puerto Rico. I spoke Spanish. I was a simultaneous bilingual. And they had a really heavy campaign at home for maintenance of the heritage language. And my mom worked in education in K-5 as a paraprofessional for many years. And so, you know, there was a lot of teacher emphasis, let's say. And I remember spending summers with family in Puerto Rico. We'd spend the whole summer, every summer there with my grandparents, with my cousins, and talking about language learning, how they were learning English and how sometimes their English learning wasn't necessarily on point to what they wanted. And then for me, really, TESOL has always kind of been a part of my life. I didn't always think that I would teach TESOL. In full honesty, my undergraduate is psychology and anthropology. I dabbled in archaeology my first year out of undergrad.
Nice.
And I ended up substitute teaching elementary school in the off season because we didn't dig through the frozen cold of the quote Maryland winters.
Yeah, Maryland, that would be a little bit tough.
It was cold. So eventually I found myself realizing that this is what I wanted to do. And I got my credentials and I, you know, have been full time with UCF since I came back from teaching abroad in Bangladesh, which was, I want to say I started full time since 2016. I did work as a GTA before then when I was in my MA. And before I taught full time for UCF, I worked with Seminole State in their intensive English ESOL and ELI programs.
That's
so
awesome.
So it's been an interesting ride, the whole thing. And
taking you a lot of different places. That's really cool.
It's been a lot of different places. I've been very fortunate to have wonderful mentorship as I prepared to teach my students. So it's interesting for me to kind of put a timeline on it because I feel like a part of me has always kind of been touching TESOL. I would say I've been working primarily with adults since 2012. So it's been a couple years since then.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I started off, so I got my BA from Arizona and continued and got my master's in teaching French, actually, and then taught for 2 years in a high school. mm-hmm. in Southwest Georgia, which is really interesting. And then I actually moved up to Wisconsin to pursue a PhD in French mm-hmm. or French literature, because I admired my professors from Arizona so much. And I was like, oh, it'd be great to, you know everything about a particular author, or, mm-hmm. Know how to speak about literature and whatever. And then life happened and I found the job at UCF in 2006. So I've been at UCF for almost 15 years now, which is crazy because when I moved down here, my son was 6 months old. Wow. And now he's going to turn 15 in February.
Wow. Yeah. Life just goes by so fast.
Yeah. <laughs> So fast.
Gosh. Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing. And like those of us who teach languages, I think that a lot of us have some interesting stories about how we landed where we landed. And like the path to getting to here, I think is always a fun one to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, everyone's different. Like I didn't know you taught in Bangladesh. That's mm-hmm. I mean, and the thing that I love the most about the ESOL people, because I have my PhD in TESOL, mm-hmm. but I've never taught ESOL.
Okay.
I teach language, but not English. And everybody I know who's been in ESOL, they have traveled extensively, have gone to like these fabulous sounding places, Bangladesh. A couple of my cohort members taught in Korea and Japan and mm-hmm. amazing.
We have fun conferences. I'll say that. Like there's fun storytelling at our conferences. Shout out to anybody interested in TESOL International Convention. That's the place to get a lot of cool stories.
Very cool.
Yeah. So just, getting back to the teaching, because we are both teachers here in the Modern mm-hmm. Languages Department. What's your favorite part of teaching your students?
So I definitely prefer teaching face-to-face. I love having the interaction. I love being able to see what students understand on the spot and targeting when I see that little bit of doubt. Mm. When they answer a question with a question, they want it to be an answer, but their intonation makes it a question.
Mm-hmm.
And you can stop for just a minute and figure out with them, where is the element of doubt? What are you not sure about?
Mm-hmm.
And going from uncertain to more confident in a language that they don't necessarily think they can master, that to me is the best part about teaching, is seeing that light bulb go off in their head. When you take the time, you stop for a minute, instead of just keep pushing forward, 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 you stop and you address some element of doubt, and it builds the student's confidence and they feel so much better about themselves and feel able, competent in the language. That's everything to me. It's harder to do online,
mm-hmm.
But it is nice to still get the feedback and get student projects that show that they've been able to manipulate mm-hmm. The language in ways that we expect them to be able to do. But it's harder to gauge lesson by lesson what is clicking and what isn't. But getting that light bulb moment.
Yes, that's what I call them too. I'm like the aha moments or the light bulb moments. And, we definitely as teachers live for those moments. I like what you're talking about reading student faces, because I know we read student faces all the time in a classroom and even in like synchronous Zoom, which is a lot of what I've been doing for the past couple months, because hashtag 2020, I have everybody with their webcams on and I'm looking at their faces and I'm saying, okay, so I see that, what does this face tell me? And then I'll say, hey, why don't you go ahead and share with me, what are you thinking here? And going from there, I've found it's interesting to see how students respond in the chat as well. Maybe if they're too shy to talk out loud, they'll type something in the chat privately and then I'll be able to address it. So that's been the kind of like sort of nice surprise for me from like the live Zoom synchronous things we've been doing.
That's good.
But I do miss being in the classroom too. There's a certain energy to it that we Definitely. Don't have exactly the same when we're all stuck behind screens.
I think it's one thing so online lessons, like I have all of my information there. And even for my face-to-face classes, I give them all of my lesson stuff, the meat and potatoes kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And when I get into class, I don't like to spend so much time teaching. It's more of a flipped classroom kind of a situation where I've had them look ahead of time and then come in and we kind of target those things that I know are problematic.
For sure.
Or that they bring up and say, I had trouble with this. So you're able to go off script a lot more and make it more practical.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you're talking about the energy in a classroom. That's that's the energy. That's where I draw my energy from is, mm-hmm. is doing things, not just teaching and the teacher talk, but getting them to produce.
Yeah.
It's hard, much harder to do for me in particular
via
with French, you know, gotcha. It's just,
yeah. I love a good workshop class. I love a good workshop class. We're like, hey guys, we're going to workshop this. Let's work and, you know, mm-hmm. let's do it that way.
Or getting them to play games.
Yeah.
Like I have like a, it's almost like a Monopoly board type of a thing, a board game where they roll the dice or they do random.org because nobody carries dice unless they're a gamer.
Yeah.
But have them go on random.org, you know, they move their pieces on the board and they have to conjugate verbs. They have to, you know, make sentences and mm-hmm. make conversations or anything like that. That's
a lot of fun. I used to do a lot of board games when I taught, especially abroad in Bangladesh, and I'd have them flip a coin, like heads was one space, tails was two spaces, and then we'd move around and we'd do that kind of thing, and different versions of board games. I like that you brought that up. It's always fun to have like interactive lighter sides to mm-hmm. To the classroom as well.
Is there any particular topic, because I have my own fortes or things that I really like to teach, is there any particular topic that you enjoy teaching the most to TESOL students, either English learners or if you're working with future teachers of TESOL, is there anything that...
Gosh, it's hard for me to choose one thing because I really enjoy working with like all aspects of my learners. I do a lot of different things with my English learners. I've primarily focused a lot on teaching writing in the last couple of years. And I know that if I say, oh, yes, we're going to talk about teaching writing, like maybe that doesn't sound like the most exciting thing. But for me, it's exciting to get people to go from, how do we go from a concept to an organized idea? How do we polish a draft? Like talking to them about how writing isn't just one thing that you turn in for one assignment. Like I want them to understand that everybody's a writer. Like everybody can write. Everybody is capable of organizing and justifying. And I try to encourage them too, because a lot of the times I think that sometimes we can be very self-critical when we're writing in another language and or just writing in general, let's be honest here. We can be very self-critical, and I try to encourage them, like, listen, you have fine ideas. Like the challenge is getting those ideas clearly across to a reader. Mm-hmm. The confidence that I've found in some students, and I can even go back to like when I worked in the writing center that I helped to put together for my host university in Bangladesh. And I was talking to students and, you know, for many of them, they had never gotten like a high A on a paper before. And I said, guys, here's the rubric, here's the expectation, let's talk about the process. And they worked hard, got through it, got a high grade, and we're like, oh my gosh, teacher, like this is the first time that I've gotten such a good grade. And I'm like, well, let's talk about why. You put in the work, you know, you did the steps, you followed through. And to me, it's really encouraging for people to gain that confidence in their target language. So that's been fun. As far as, you know, spoken activities, I love teaching a good debate section. I love a good debate. That's fun. And people, they get into it. Like with my EAP students at UCF, they'll get into it. Those semesters I do debate and I'm like, okay, no, it's their turn. We're going to sit down and now it's their turn. And it's always a fun activity for them. With my pre-service teachers, I enjoy just talking with them about, to borrow Dr. Fulce's slogan of teacher to teacher chats with them about, hey, this is why we're learning this. And, you know, like you said, watching the light bulbs go off of like, yeah, I do need to know that aspect of this verb tense. And I do need to know why it's challenging for this particular first language background. And, oh, I see why that makes sense. So for me, that's really exciting from my end too.
Yeah, it's a little different for you, native speaker to native speaker, figuring out using your experience and using our mentor's experience of this is what is challenging teaching English, even though you're a native English speaker. So for me, I'm a non-native speaker of French, teaching non-native speakers of French. So I've been through that struggle. I got my B, and I love to tell my students that I got a B in French 1.
Yeah,
I could not figure out the difference between the singular he is and the plural, they are. It, for some reason, it didn't click until way too late for whatever reason. So it can be done. You know, I learned from a book. I never even studied abroad. Mm-hmm. I learned straight out of a book. It was a lot of work. And it's just, that's a little bit different. Your situation is a little bit different. So, mm-hmm. but it's still really interesting. There's still so much to be gained from, like you said, those teacher talks.
Yeah. I think that on your end, you must be able to connect on a nice level with your non-native speakers of French, because like you said, like, I've been there, I've done that. I understand the challenge of going from English to French. I get it. Let's talk about it.
I've devised I have like a system that I've devised, and I joke with my students, halfway joke, it's like Novocaine, give it time, it'll work. You just follow the steps.
Yeah.
It'll work. Like, just trust me, I'm not giving you anything that won't work.
Yeah.
You know, it might not be as sophisticated as you want to sound, but you don't need to sound sophisticated. I want you to have the basics down.
Yeah, so. We're building the foundation. And one of the things that, you know, the themes, I think, in all language learning takes time. Mm-hmm. It takes time. It's not a magical, like, boom, here, automatically I'm a Google Translate in my head. Like, right. You know, we gotta... Yeah.
Do you find that students... And in particular, the English language learners, do you find that they say, oh, it should be easy?
No, actually. I think for the most part, and that's interesting, like my students do really very much for the most part come in with the attitude of, I'm working hard. I know this isn't easy. I know this is a challenge. And for many of them, they've been learning English. My English language learners that I teach, for many of them, they've been learning English for, you know, a number of years, some of them since grade school. And, you know, when we think about the ways that, when I talk to my pre-service teachers and I say, hey, think of the way that you were introduced Spanish in your K through 12 and the amount of effort that you put into Spanish in your K through 12 experience. And imagine that some of your students might have had the same attitude while they were getting their intro English abroad. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they find themselves in a situation where now they're immersed in English and they have to operate in English. Think how you would feel if you were immersed in a Spanish-speaking country with just what you had from your K through 12. Yes. And so I think that that kind of analogy helps my pre-service teachers to imagine, mm-hmm. you know, what that could be like. But yeah, generally speaking, I think that we all understand that it's hard work. It's hard work to go from there.
Yeah. What is it? It's like 10,000 hours or something like that. Or
they say, like, you know, to get any skill at, you know, a very proficient level, it's 10,000 hours, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting. Students seem to have, at least in my experience, I think students, ambitious students, which there's nothing wrong with ambition, but some of the more ambitious students come in thinking, I'm going to, you know how to say everything I know how to say in English, in French by the end of the semester. And it's like, look, I only have you for 37 and a half hours. And mm-hmm. it shocks them mm-hmm. because we see them for less than 2 days, two full days during an entire semester.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the high expectations of yourself, but... You know, there's a little dash of realism that needs to be thrown in there.
Anyway. Yeah, I think the patience aspect is really important for anybody trying to learn a language. Yeah. I think for those of us who have more than one language bouncing around in our heads, I think it's helpful because I've always had Spanish and English bouncing around in my head doing its thing. Mm-hmm. And you have English and French in your head bouncing around. So like that ability to make those connections. And the code switching.
Like if there's something, because I'm a different person when I speak English than when I speak French.
You know,
I'm a different person when I speak than when I write. It's interesting.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, especially in my case, since my Spanish foundation is heritage. I open my mouth and I sound a lot more like my parents' generation than my generation. So if I'm like, hey, I'm going to just, you know, hear some Spanish and be like, you don't sound like you're Puerto Rican. I'm like, well, I don't sound like my cousins in my age bracket from the mm-hmm. island. But if you think about it, I sound a little bit like my parents' generation. And I'm not mad at that. That's fine with me.
So, there's a whole bunch of identity things going on right
now. I know, right? Oh gosh, it's been really fun chatting with you, Liz. Just, you know, for our listeners, what's a fun fact that you'd like our listeners to know about you?
So I was thinking about this earlier, and the first fun fact that I thought of was that I was a Division I student athlete. I got a full scholarship to the University of Arizona for track and field.
Awesome. Congratulations. That sounds intense.
I was a really good high school athlete. I had a national championship and a state championship to my name. So I ran in college and had a full scholarship, and that was a lot of fun, and I definitely took it for granted and wish I could be in the same shape as I was.
There's a lot of respect I have for you for that, and I just want to say, like, running in my mind is incredibly difficult. I am not a good runner, and one time I muscled my way through a half marathon, and then I said, never again. My sister convinced me to join a half marathon, and I said, nope, I trained for that, and that was done.
I have never done a 5K. I will not sign up to do a 5K or a half marathon or a full marathon. There is nothing in me that says I need to do that.
Were you a speed runner then?
Yeah, I'm a sprinter. Oh, gotcha. And I was a heptathlete. So my national championship came from an indoor pentathlon.
Nice.
And it actually came in the same year as I won the state championship in California for high jump.
Awesome. So awesome.
Yeah. So I had a really good junior season.
Awesome.
And my last meet for Arizona, I got third in the Pac-10 for high jump. So wow. That was my crowning achievement for my college career.
I got a clap going on here that's kind of soft so that it doesn't, mess with the audio levels. But
right. What about really yourself? Cool. Is there something fun that you would like our listeners to know about you?
Oh, gosh. I don't have anything that impressive, Liz. I definitely was not a star athlete. I was a choir kid in high school, and I was, villager number 3 in the background of Oklahoma and Damn Yankees and that kind of thing.
That is a special kind of bravery, because I think I would get stage fright.
I was always really comfortable in the background. Like, if I would get terrible stage fright if I had to do any speaking of any kind, but I was totally fine in a choir, totally fine in the background. I enjoyed the musicals, the singing, the dance, and I did choir for a number of years, even into university, although I would not call myself a musician per se. My husband was a music major in undergrad, saxophone performance, and he's a musician. I am not.
Wow.
So I'm like, okay, that's fine. But I enjoy it. I mean, I play amateur piano, amateur guitar. I sing amateurly for family. So that's a thing. I guess, especially now during like the COVID year, have gotten in touch with my inner crafty side. So I got back into sewing. I got back into crocheting.
Wow.
I got into reupholstering my furniture. You know, like I got into those kinds of things when I had the time.
You have a lot of creativity.
I enjoy the creative side of
creative.
Yeah. I like that teaching and materials development gives me a chance to flex my creativity side.
I agree.
Get to play with, things like digital formatting and templates and audio. And, as much as I enjoy music, I enjoy playing with audio. I enjoy playing with sound mixing, so that it all kind of blends together.
Well, I know we are taking full advantage of that for this podcast, and we appreciate all of your skills in that area. Because it wouldn't be as successful or as lovely sounding without you.
I'm grateful that, we had a group of people say, yeah, that sounds like an okay idea, Christina, run with it. So I said, all right, let's do it.
Thank you.
Yay. Well, thank you, Liz. And we're really excited to have you as our additional host or as our co-host for the spring 2021 season. So listeners, you're going to hear from both of us this semester and a lot more alumni stories from the Modern Languages Department. Thank you for listening to this episode of Futures and Languages. I'd like to give a shout out to Davideo Guy for our intro and outro music downloaded from freesound.org. I'm Christina Torres, and today I was talking with Dr. Elizabeth Giltner, who is a co-host for the spring 2021 season. Tune in next time to hear more alumni stories from Modern Languages. For more information about all of our language programs in the Modern Languages Department, please visit our website at mll.ch.ucf.edu.